Welcome back, everyone, to the Deep Dive. This time we're going deep on a case, Slocum v. Food Fair Stores, one that I think we can all agree is a mainstay in law school and legal practice, right? It's a 1958 case out of the Florida Supreme Court. And it really digs into this, well, this kind of tricky question of where exactly the line is between someone who's being rude, you know, and when their words actually cross over into, well, legally actionable harm. You know, the whole intentional infliction of emotional distress or IED thing. Now, joining me is, well, you know them, our legal expert who, let me tell you, really does love a good tort case. What is it about Slocum that makes it so fascinating, so interesting to you?
Oh, you're absolutely right. I really do have a soft spot for a good tort case. And Slocum, well, it's a classic for a reason, you know? I think what really grabs me about it is, well, it's how it takes on these questions that, well, they're just as relevant today as they were back then, maybe even more so. I mean, think about it. It's the age of, what, cyberbullying, online harassment, and let's not forget, I mean, those toxic workplace environments we hear so much about, right? All these situations where words, just words by themselves, I mean, it can really have a devastating impact, right? Slocum really forces us to think about, well, that age-old question of when words actually cause harm that the law should recognize, you know, when it needs to step in.
Okay, so let's sort of set the stage here. We've got Julia Slocum at a supermarket, you know, just doing her shopping, trying to get the price of something, just, you know, typical grocery store stuff. She asks an employee, and the response she gets, well, let's just say it's not exactly what you'd expect from, well, you know, the friendly neighborhood grocer. The employee says, if you want to know the price, you'll have to find out the best way you can. You stink to me. Ouch. Right. I mean, rude. Unprofessional. Definitely. No argument there. But does it really rise to the level of, well, outrageous conduct? You know, the kind we need to see for legal action, for emotional distress?
Well, that's really the heart of the matter, isn't it? And to really understand why the court decided the way they did, we'll have to unpack the whole legal framework around these IED claims, right? Remember, back in 58, when Slocum was decided, well, this whole concept of intentional infliction of emotional distress, it was still pretty new in, you know, in the legal world. The restatement of torts, Section 46 specifically, it gave some, you know, some guidelines by outlining those elements you got to prove for this tort. And one of the big ones, well, the defendant's behavior, it can't just be rude, right? It has to be outrageous. I mean, we're talking beyond all bounds of decency that a civilized society is willing to tolerate.
So it's like the courts are basically saying, look, we can't go around punishing every instance of someone being a jerk, right? Or just having bad manners. There has to be a line, a clear line. And the big question in Slocum was, well, did this employee's, shall we say, smelly comment actually cross that line?
Exactly. And this is where things get really interesting. The Florida Supreme Court, they sided with the supermarket in the end. They used what we call, well, you know, the ordinary sensibilities standard. Basically, they're asking themselves, would this conduct, would it really cause severe emotional distress to, well, to an average person, not someone overly sensitive or anything, but just, you know, your average Joe or Jane? And their conclusion, well, the employee's words, they were, you know, harsh, maybe even mean-spirited, but they weren't so outrageous that they would cause severe emotional distress to a person of, well, ordinary sensibilities.
Hold on a sec. But Mrs. Slocum, I mean, she actually claimed she had a heart attack and that her existing heart condition got worse because of this whole verbal attack, right? It wasn't like just hurt feelings. She was experiencing actual, real physical symptoms. Shouldn't that be part of, you know, the court's thinking?
Yeah, you've definitely hit on a very important distinction that the court, well, they had to wrestle with, right? They acknowledged that Mrs. Slocum experienced real physical symptoms, but they drew this line, you know? They drew a line between physical harm that resulted from the emotional distress and the emotional distress itself. They're very clear, you know, that the outrageous conduct, it has to directly cause severe emotional distress. Any physical consequences that come after, well, they're kind of secondary, you know what I mean? In this case, the court just didn't see the employee's words meeting that really high bar.
So it sounds like the court was kind of saying, look, you got to have thicker skin than that, right? And I get not wanting to open the floodgates to, you know, every rude comment becoming a lawsuit. But this, I don't know, it does feel a little harsh. Do you think?
Oh, absolutely. That fear of a, well, a litigation floodgate, that was exactly what the court was worried about. They argued that, well, if they let Mrs. Slocum's claim go through based on, this level of insult, then, well, every little snide comment, every rude remark could end up in court. Can you imagine? It'd be chaos. I mean, think about it, right? We've got workplace harassment laws now that, well, they've evolved, haven't they? They protect people from these, I don't know, hostile work environments. And a lot of times, well, that includes verbal abuse, doesn't it? And then there's, well, the internet, right? I mean, talk about a wild west. Cyberbullying, all that stuff that can inflict, well, I mean, serious emotional harm through words alone, right? It's a whole different ballgame now. So, yeah, I think Slocum, well, it would definitely be looked at differently today, wouldn't it?
So are you saying that this whole ordinary sensibilities standard that the court used back then, it's kind of outdated? I mean, what we think of as outrageous today, it's got to be different than, well, 60 plus years ago, right?
Oh, for sure. I mean, what might have just seemed like bad manners back then? Well, it could be seen as completely unacceptable today, especially with, well, I mean, with how much more we understand now about, the psychological impact of like harassment and abuse and all that. Courts today, they'd probably consider things like, well, like the context of the speech, right? The power dynamic between, well, the people involved and even, the victim's specific vulnerabilities, It's a much more, well, I'd say it's a much more nuanced approach now.
Okay, I'm with you. But how would that, I mean, how would that apply to, our grocery store scenario here? I mean, yeah, the employee was rude, sure, but it's not like, well, he was Mrs. Slocum's boss, right? Or someone with power over her or anything. It was like a, well, just a random encounter at the store.
Right, that's a good point. But even in those, those kind of everyday customer merchant interactions, there's still a power imbalance there, even if it's subtle. The employee, just by, well, just by being in that role, they kind of represent the business, right? And they're expected to, well, to uphold a certain level of professionalism. And in today's world, I mean, with, customer service being so important and businesses being, well, super aware of their public image and all that, courts might be more likely to see that kind of conduct as, well, as outrageous, especially if it, if it actually harms the customer.
Whoa, hold on. So you're saying the employee's like position within the company, that could actually be a factor in deciding whether their words are, well, considered outrageous? That's pretty wild.
Exactly. Context. Well, context is key in these cases, right? While Slocum was really focused on, preventing this flood of lawsuits over, well, over every little bit of rudeness, modern courts, they might be more willing to, to acknowledge that words can be used as weapons, so to speak, especially in certain environments, right? Or by people in, well, in positions of authority.
This makes me think, how, I mean, how do we reconcile this potential shift in, how courts interpret these cases with, well, with the First Amendment, right? The whole free speech thing. Where do we draw that line, that line in the sand between, well, protected expression and emotional harm that the law should, well, actually step in and do something about?
Well, now you've hit the million-dollar question, haven't you? It's a real tightrope walk, and it's one that legal scholars and courts, well, they're always grappling with it, aren't they? On the one hand, you've got, well, this fundamental right to free speech, but on the other hand, you've also got to protect people from harm, right? And that includes, well, it includes emotional harm, doesn't it?
Sounds like courts really have to, well, to walk that fine line between those two principles. You can't punish every, well, offensive thing someone says, right? But you can't just, well, you can't just ignore genuinely harmful speech either.
Exactly. And that's where this outrageousness standard, the one we keep coming back to, that's where it comes into play. It's like a filter, right? Making sure that only the most, well, the most extreme and egregious conduct, the stuff that, well, that truly shocks the conscience, that's what's subject to legal action. It's not about, turning every instance of hurt feelings or bad manners into, into a lawsuit. It's about, well, it's about offering a legal remedy when someone experiences, severe emotional distress caused by truly outrageous behavior.
It really makes you wonder, if Mrs. Slocum's case, if it happened today, I mean, would it have played out differently, you think? With how we understand emotional harm now and how workplace conduct has changed and all that. I mean, do you think a court today, a modern court, would have ruled in her favor?
It's definitely possible, isn't it? And that's what I mean, that's what I love about the law, you know? It's constantly evolving, adapting to societal changes, right? Slocum, it's an important precedent for sure, but it's not, well, you know, it's not set in stone or anything. Courts today, they definitely look at the context, you know, the power dynamics and the potential for harm in a very different light. They'd consider those factors we talked about, you know, the setting, the relationship between the people involved and the potential impact of those words.
Okay, so let's bring this back to what, you know, to our listeners, all those law students and legal eagles out there. What are the key takeaways from Slocum that they should be thinking about, you know, as they encounter these kind of issues in their own work? What's the big picture stuff here?
Well, first and foremost, right, Slocum makes it crystal clear. You know, there's a high bar to clear when you're trying to prove an IED claim. It's not enough to just be, well, you know, offended or upset by someone's words. The conduct, it has to be truly outrageous, you know, going way beyond what a civilized society is willing to put up with.
So basically, don't run to court every time someone says something mean to you, right? Noted. What else should our listeners kind of take away for this?
Second, and this is a big one, right? Slocum really drives home the importance of context in these cases, you know. Who said the words? Where were they said? What was the relationship between, you know, the people involved? All of those factors, they can drastically impact how a court determines, well, you know, outrageousness, right?
Right, because what might be seen as outrageous in one situation, well, could be, you know, completely normal in another. It's all about the context.
Exactly. And finally, I think Slocum reminds us that, well, the law, it's constantly evolving, isn't it? What might have been considered, you know, ordinary sensibilities back in 1958, well, it might be viewed very differently today, right?
So as future lawyers, our listeners, they need to be aware of these, you know, these shifting standards, right? And be ready to argue their cases accordingly. It's not enough to just, well, you know, to just know the old cases. They've got to stay on top of how the law is, well, how it's evolving.
Absolutely. The world is changing, you know, and it's changing fast. And the law, well, the law has to keep up, doesn't it? Slocum, it's a foundational case, you know. It helps shape our understanding of emotional distress. But it's essential to view it through a modern lens, you know what I mean? We need to consider how societal norms have changed and all the new ways that words can be used to cause harm, especially with, you know, with the rise of technology and social media and all that.
So in a nutshell, Slocum, well, it set a high bar, but it's not, you know, it's not the final word or anything. It's a starting point for, you know, for thinking critically about the relationship between free speech and emotional harm and how the law, well, you know, how the law navigates that really complex terrain.
Perfectly put. And as we, you know, as we move further into this digital age, these questions, well, they're only going to become more pressing, aren't they? Slocum might be a case from the past, but its lessons, well, they're more relevant than ever. We need to keep those discussions going.
Okay, so we've covered a lot of ground here, haven't we? And we talked about, well, you know, what happened in the case, the legal framework around IED, the ordinary sensibilities standard, how societal norms might impact things today, and that delicate balance between free speech and protecting people from emotional harm. But before we, you know, before we wrap things up, I want to leave our listeners with a final thought-provoking question, you know. Something to really chew on. Imagine you're on the jury in Slocum. How would you weigh those competing interests, right? Where would you draw the line between, you know, protected speech, even if it's offensive and outrageous conduct, the kind that's so bad, so over the top that it justifies taking legal action for emotional distress, right? Tough call, isn't it?
Oh, it's a fantastic question. And, well, there's no easy answer, is there? I mean, it really makes you, you know, examine your own, well, your own values, right? Your beliefs about, you know, about free speech and personal responsibility and, well, how much the law should really be, you know, be involved in regulating how we how we interact with each other. You know, it's big stuff.
It really is. I mean, we don't want to, you know, to live in a world where you can get sued for every little, well, you know, for every little insult or offhand remark, right? But we also can't just, we can't ignore the real harm that words can, well, that words can inflict, right? It's all about finding that balance.
Right, right. Cases like Slocum, they're so valuable because they force us to grapple with those, you know, those tough questions and the complexities of, well, of the law, right? There's no magic formula, is there? Or a one-size-fits-all answer. It's about carefully considering, you know, the specific facts of each case and the legal principles that are at play and, well, and the broader implications, right, for society as a whole.
So as we, you know, as we wrap up our deep dive into Slocum v. Food Fair Stores, I think, well, the main takeaway is this, right? Words, they have power. And the law, well, the law is constantly evolving to address how that power can be used, you know, for good or for bad. It's a fascinating area of law. And it's always changing, isn't it? It's one that'll definitely keep us all on our toes.
Couldn't have said it better myself. Slocum, it may be a case from, well, you know, from the past, but it's less, they're timeless, aren't they? It reminds us that the law is, well, it's a living, breathing thing, you know? It has to adapt to, well, to the realities of our world. And as we navigate these, you know, these tricky waters of free speech and emotional harm and where to draw the line on acceptable conduct, cases like this one, well, they'll continue to help us understand that delicate balance, right, between individual rights and the well-being of society as a whole.
And on that note, we'll leave you to ponder those questions. Until next time, you know, keep diving deep and keep those legal minds engaged.